Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with David Brunetti. David is a musician, a pianist, a singer, an actor, and is best known as the creator of Acting Songs. That is his coaching career, where he works all over the world to help people become the kind of singer that they really want to be, to act their songs, to bring life to their songs. And one of the places where David coaches is at the Oslo Conservatory for Actor Training in Sarasota, Florida, where he not only spends a week teaching the acting students to make the most of their songs, but he also does a performance for those of us who are interested in observing it. And that is a fundraiser for the Oslo Conservatory. So now you get a chance to listen to David and know why you should come down to the Oslo Conservatory for Actor Training fundraiser on December 14th and support this amazing work. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
is not necessarily the life anyone else was meant to live. It is not necessarily the life that your siblings or parents or cousins or neighbors or friends were meant to live. There's a life that you were meant to live. There's a way of being in the world which fits you, which is specially designed for you, for the kinds of sympathies that you have, for the talents, the natural instincts that you have. It is my belief, based on my more than 30 years as a psychotherapist, that unfortunately, few of us are living the life we were meant to live. Most of us are living what I call our cover stories. We are demonstrating ways of being that are not really integral to us. Why would that be? Why would we be living a cover story? Which is, of course, the truth. It's just not the whole truth about us. Because too many of us had to bury parts of our real self in our childhood. Too many of us realized very, very young that things that were natural to us, things that came spontaneously to us, didn't somehow fit with the family we were born into, or the school that we went to, or the culture that we were raised in. And so, because we human beings are so extraordinarily flexible, as soon as we realize that these things did not work, which is to say that they didn't bring smiles and affection and love and care, they might have brought frowns and ignoring and maybe even punishment, maybe even trauma. Once we discovered that these things that we did or thought or said or were not going to bring us what we needed, but were going to bring us what we didn't want, well, we immediately started to pretend that it wasn't so. We began to act as though we weren't that. And because we have these extraordinary brains, eventually we came to forget that we were ever that, whatever that was, that we were able to use the clinical term, deny ourselves. Seems remarkable, doesn't it, that we could deny ourselves, and yet, as I said, I see it over and over again. When we forget these things that we are, the language I use to talk about it is, I say that we hide it undercover. Because this truth about us, it doesn't go away. We don't amputate it. It simply is hidden from us. We are no longer able to use, to get access to benefit from those parts of ourselves which we had to hide because they didn't work in our childhood. So what does this mean? Well, to begin with, it means that we're using a lot of energy to suppress parts of ourselves, and that energy is being siphoned off from what we could be doing in our life. Also, most of us for whom this has happened, or to whom this has happened, feel then at odds with ourselves. You've heard the expression, you know, I feel like a fraud. You know, if anybody really knew me, they wouldn't like me. All that stuff. That's all talking about the disconnect between who I am and how I'm behaving. So when we've had to do that, we are not, we're imbalanced. We're not in sync. We're not, to use another kind of technical term, congruent. And it's more difficult to live that way than it is if you're all firing in the same direction, that all of who you are is being demonstrated. You're using all of who you are. You're not fighting yourself. The other really important downside to being out of sync with yourself, or having aspects of yourself undercover, is that, ironically, later in life, it's entirely possible that precisely the things that you need are the things that you hid. Precisely the abilities and the qualities that you no longer have access to are the ones that will make your life easier. And so, of course, I see in my practice people describing what they want to be able to do or want to stop doing. And we find over and over again that they don't have to somehow develop that capacity or learn to do it or find it. They have it. It's there. Undercover. But they can't access to it because the taboo against accessing it is so strong. Because it brought in childhood such consequences which we really didn't want to have. Remember, I talked about, you know, sort of rolling of the eyes, frowning, neglect, right up through trauma. Well, our brains remember that. And when we are in danger of accessing one of those qualities, our brains flash back. We may even get, although it happens so quickly that we don't see it, the flash of a parent's disapproving face, or the sensation of a slap, or the sinking feeling of, oh God, don't do that, that's not going to be good. Well, and so we don't do it. Well, the Lynn Show is all about pointing out this fact, bringing it out, so to speak, taking it out of the closet, uncovering it. And it is my hope that when you listen to me talk, you're asking yourself, is there a quality that I really wish I had? Do I wish that I was more assertive or less assertive? Do I wish that I could dance or sing or draw? Do I wish that I felt brave enough to have a child or not have a child, to leave whatever circumstances I am currently in? Am I yearning to be something that I cannot now seem to be? As I pointed out, it is not so simple as simply recognizing that this is so and then, you know, recovering it. So, I talk about this in the show. I have written about it in my book, When You Can, You Will. Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can get access to the book. You can also listen to me talking about this in other shows, all on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynshow.com. The other thing I do in my show is I play interviews with people who make their living or their life with an art. I do this because it is so difficult for artists to survive in our culture. We make it so difficult that when someone has dedicated their life to an art, it is because it is who they really are. And when you listen to them, you can hear it. You can hear what it sounds like to be deeply connected to your essential self. And as I hope that you hear when I talk about it, you can hear it when they talk about it. And it is my hope that yet again you are tempted to ask yourself to do the exploration of what you might be hiding, in what way you are not living the life you were meant to live. Today's interview is with David Brunetti. David is in some ways the poster child for what I'm talking about, and you will hear him talk about it at the end of the show. David's parents, well, I'm not going to tell you any more about David's story because it's quite interesting. And David is a person who honored himself even when it wasn't that easy. And David makes his living at the moment, and you'll hear him talk about how this happened, teaching people to act songs, to be actor singers. And we are talking in this interview about the fact that he is coming to Sarasota, Florida, as he does every year, to teach in the Oslo Conservatory for Actors program. And there is a benefit that he does every year for the conservatory where he demonstrates for the rest of us, so we can see it, his technique. So if you are in Sarasota or close to Sarasota or coming to Florida, you might consider dropping in, supporting the conservatory, an extraordinary organization, and getting a chance to see David in action. But now you can not only hear David talking about his story and his journey, but also he sent me a CD of a woman that he works with that he not only taught but plays for, and I'm going to play a couple of cuts from that album, because not only is she singing, but David is playing and he's singing with her, and it's just lovely. So here is the first cut. It's Peace Train, and then David Brunetti.
Now I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world as one, and I believe it could be. Someday it's gonna come, 'cause out on the edge of darkness there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again.
As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley.
This land was made for you and me.
Get your bags together, go bring your good friends too, because it's getting nearer, it soon will be with you. So come and join the living, it's not so far from you, and it's getting nearer, soon it will all be true.
Peace train sounding louder, climb on the peace train.
Here with David Brunetti in his studio in Manhattan.
Yep.
And I'm talking to David at this time anyway, because he's about to conduct a workshop in Sarasota, mm-hmm. a fundraiser where, you want to explain it?
Yeah, I come down every year mm-hmm. and teach the master's degree acting students. They're getting their MFAs in acting at Florida State University, and they do it at in Sarasota in conjunction with the Oslo Theater.
Right.
Now, it's not a musical theater program, but they want them to have some experience and some taste, at least, of what it's like to work in a musical, work in the musical theater world, just to open their options up, you know, when they go out into the big cold world and try to be professional actors.
Right.
Because there's a lot more. If you can do musicals, there's more options, obviously.
Right.
So they bring me down. I go down every year for a week, and I teach for a week. And the workshop is called Acting Songs. And what we've done for the last number of years is the last day that I'm there, we basically open up the class and have a presentation of the students working on songs that I've worked on them with, whatever those words are there.
Right. Many W words. Right.
So the last day they present their songs with acting included.
And people are invited, and it's a fundraiser.
This year it's a fundraiser.
Yes, and it's a fundraiser. So we're promoting it, and it's just...
So it's in the evening on Friday. So what we're going to do is we're going to open up the last class. When they come on Saturday morning, we'll have a presentation, sort of. We call it an open class, but they don't really get to see me teach at that. The students just get up one after the other and sing their songs.
Right.
The final night I'm teaching, we're going to say, you can come in and watch me teach the students. So it's just me interact and see how I get from them, what I get from them.
Okay, all right. So this is open to the public. Come and see how it's done.
Yeah, see how I teach people how to act songs.
Yes, yes. I imagine that'll be really interesting for a lot of people. So many people in Sarasota are interested in the arts anyway.
Yeah.
And if you're near Sarasota or you're planning on a holiday in Florida, this would be a good time to come.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a blast. It's really fun and exciting and emotional and wonderful.
I'm sure that it is. I would like you to talk more about it, but before we do, I always ask the same question of the people that I interview. Since you have already admitted to being a person who has spent his life in an art, and that art is apparently music.
Mm-hmm. Music and theater.
Music and theater.
Mm-hmm.
I always ask the same question, and that is, how did it happen to you? How did it start? How did it find you, or you find it?
Well, when I was 5 years old, somebody gave my family a piano that some church was throwing out in Pittsburgh. I have 8 brothers and sisters, so there were already 4 or 5 of us by then.
And where are you in the...
I'm the third oldest. I'm the oldest boy. I'm the oldest of three boys. I have six sisters and two brothers.
Wow. Okay, so here you are at so five.
Here I am at five in Pittsburgh in our little lower middle class house, and somebody gave us a piano. And I just had musical talent, and I just, you know, without even thinking about it, I would just go sit at the piano and pick out tunes, and it was clear that I was musical. And I must add, all my siblings are musical. But I went to the piano. I sort of made that my thing. And then when I was in fourth grade, I started lessons. Before that, I played by ear. I played a lot of stuff by ear. But we, at that time, they decided to send them to a teacher. So I went to a nice lady up the street who lives in Sarasota. She moved to Sarasota. Her name is Joan Siegel. So I get to see my first piano teacher when I get down. We have dinner every year.
Oh,
isn't that sweet?
That is lovely. That is.
She was the lady up the street.
Wow.
I took piano lessons from her when I was 9 years old in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
In the 19th century. And now she lives in Sarasota, retired to Sarasota. So it's so sweet. Oh, boy, the karma, you know, it's just no accidents. So I played the piano all during my upbringing. And I also wanted to act, so I would do TV commercials in Pittsburgh. And
oh, how old when you started doing that?
10 or 11.
Really?
Yeah.
Did your parents take you to auditions, or you, how did you...
My father was in advertising. He was an art director for an advertising agency, so he had sort of contact with people that would make commercials and stuff like that. And so that was sort of a natural, you know, adjunct to what I was doing. And I went to college at Carnegie Mellon. I started as a piano major, but I really wanted to act more than anything. So I switched, after a couple of years of that, to the acting program at Carnegie Mellon, which was a great acting program. And I you know, just pause at this point and just say, I just knew from the time I was a kid what I wanted to do. And it turned into theater. I could have turned into some other branch of music, I suppose, but it turned into theater because when I went to high school in Pittsburgh, my Catholic all-boys high school, when I was a freshman in high school, the drama director there had heard about me as a piano player from one of the grade schools.
Oh.
And they were always looking for piano players for their musicals, so he grabbed me by the arm and pulled me into the auditorium and said, you're going to play the piano for our musicals.
Wow.
And then I started playing in summer stock musicals right away in high school. I would, you know, go out and get jobs. I was working already.
I was just going to say, you started working when you were 10. You've been working all your life.
I started actually, working, sort of really getting paid for it as a freshman in high school, because that summer I went into summer stock and musical direct shows and played the piano for shows. So I did all that. And I would sometimes act also, you know, and that kind of stuff. So I switched to acting at Carnegie Mellon. And I studied with the master acting teacher at the time, was a man named John Ulmer, who ended up being the artistic director of the Oslo.
Uh-huh.
So after I left college and John went down to Florida, he started bringing me down there. I moved to New York after college to be in the theater here, whatever I would do in the theater. And I ended up being an actor for about 10 years, alternating with musical work.
Stage?
Stage work, yeah. Stage. I mean, I would do... what I wanted to be was Al Pacino. That's the career I wanted. I could not find my way into it.
No.
And so I you know, I worked really hard. I had an agent, and I did some. I was a standby on Broadway and off Broadway. I did stuff as an actor off Broadway, but I kept getting cast as sort of musical stuff and stuff. I wanted to do more dramatic stuff, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't find my way.
They didn't see you.
And the musical work as a pianist and musical director. That came knocking at my
door. Right.
I mean, I was working on Broadway as an assistant conductor in my 20s, you know, and I wasn't even looking for it. I sort of would go, oh, all right. It was confusing because I would be in New York auditioning, and I'd walk into a room and they'd say, oh, we know you, you're a musical director. And I'd say, well, no, today I'm an actor. So it was like split personality. It was kind of crazy. Then when I hit 30, it just sort of evolved. I evolved out of the acting stuff. But I had so much acting training and so much musical training that I was made to be a coach.
Yeah.
You know, I was just, because I know how what acting.
You'd already trained to train, right?
Yeah.
Right.
In both ways. And the thing that I came up with was how to bring acting to songs. Because it was a puzzlement to me when I came to New York. I knew how to act a lot because I had a really great training at Carnegie Mellon, and I took more acting training here, as everybody does generally when you come here. You just get into acting class, and I got into as good acting classes here, and I was auditioning and all that stuff. But when I would get to songs, I would feel like I didn't know what I was doing because it was the additional elements that the song calls for. It wasn't simply acting a scene
right.
or a monologue.
No, you have to sing.
you have to sing while you're while you're acting.
Right.
And so I would get, it was very hard for me to do that. It is for a lot of people.
The opposite is true for me.
You can act when you sing and not act. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Did you grow up singing?
Yes.
Yeah.
I did.
I've seen this. People have come to me who only sing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they do a scene or do a monologue, they're not as alive. And the music throws you into a place of bigger expression.
Yes. If it does for you.
That's right.
If you're connected to it. That's exactly right.
Right.
So primarily what you're trying to do is to do the opposite of what I'm trying to do.
I have people from every angle. Mm-hmm. I have people who I have opera singers.
Ah.
I have pop and rock singers who have never done any acting in their life.
Yeah. Oh.
And I have straight actors, people who have never done any musicals in their work. I have people from every possible
right,
angle.
So you can cross them.
Yeah.
Right?
Because the process that I work with them is the same no matter who I'm working with. So I sort of came up with a series
I was just going to say
steps.
You developed it, right?
I developed a process.
Mm-hmm.
That's a step-by-step technique to bring acting to the songs.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't have when I got to New York.
So how did you get it?
I had a teacher named Hal Holden who had some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I used a lot of what John Ulmer had taught me about acting and just a lot of my own sort of experimentation and work as an actor myself.
Mm-hmm.
I would go, oh, I had a lot of light bulbs would start to go off. You could do it like this.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it like this. You could do this. This is how to bring this to life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so I do it. Now I do it in New York. I coach singers privately in New York. And I do lots of different things with singers, too. So luckily I stay real busy.
So do you teach voice as well?
I don't teach people how to produce the sound.
Okay. Right.
That's what a voice teacher does.
Right,
a vocal
right.
coach is more is almost always a pianist.
Mm-hmm.
So the services I offer when people come to me are, I help people find material.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very good at finding repertoire for people, and they're always looking for songs for auditions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big thing in New York, you know. Because I remember going to coaches when I was an actor in New York, and I'd go to coaches and they'd say, I don't have anything to do with finding repertoire. I'm just going to help you. Or somebody else would say, I'm good at finding repertoire, but I'm not good at coaching. So I do all of it.
Wow.
So I help people find songs. If they get roles, I help them learn the music. If they need to just learn the notes,
right.
That kind of thing. And I do acting coaching. People do get all or some or part of whatever they want from me. You know, I'm willing to do it. Some people come to me just for the acting
mm-hmm.
technique. And they'll say, I don't know how to audition. I don't know what to do when I go into an audition. And I can show them just the nuts and bolts of how to do that.
So, were you doing this? Did John Ulmer know that you were doing this, and
yes.
That's why he asked you to come down?
Well, he would ask me to come down initially as a musical director.
Ah.
Because he was directing musicals once a year. He would usually do a musical, and I would come down to the musical director show, and he said, "You should teach a class. You should teach the students while you're here." And I thought, I would have no idea what are you talking about? I wasn't trained to teach.
So again, this came to you.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. I was just pulled into a room. I was pulled into a room when I was a freshman in high school to play music, to play the piano for musical.
Right.
And John Ulmer pulled me into a room at the Oslo and said, "Teach."
Teach.
What I would do initially when I first got done this early couple of years, I would just do one day or 2 days that and just sort of talk to them about the process that I was developing at the time. I was just coming up with it too.
Yeah. Well, and this sort of coalesced it for you, right? That
yeah.
You put, and it gave you a place to develop it.
It gave me
it, right?
The place to develop it like, no, like nothing
right,
else.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's,
and it actually, you had to develop it for it.
Yeah.
So what else were you going to
yeah.
do?
And eventually I wrote a book because I looked around at the books that were mm-hmm. around because I like having it written out,
mm-hmm.
you know, in other areas of technique and stuff like that. But I couldn't find a book that talked about what I was doing. They all confused me or talked about approaches that I didn't like,
mm-hmm.
external approaches. And mine is more an internal, organic acting approach. So people said to me, "You should just write it." And I thought,
so
all
what's,
right.
What's it called?
It's called Acting Songs.
Of course it is.
That's the name of my website, too, actingsongs.com.
Uh-huh. Right.
So I did all this stuff over the years to get a website, and I wrote the book and got it published. And the book has been great for me. It's gotten me working. I work in Europe. Every year, several times.
Wow.
Sweden and Denmark. I've taught in London. I have a regular job in Denmark that I go to. This year I'm going 3 times. There's
wow.
a school called the Danish Musical Academy. It's like a college for people that want to be in musical theater.
So how did they get the book?
So crazy. A student of mine in New York said to me, A friend of mine is visiting from Sweden. This is in the late 90s. A friend of mine is visiting from Sweden, he runs a musical school over there. Could he come watch a lesson? I said, sure. He came and watched a lesson. He said, would you come to Sweden and teach? So I went to teach. I didn't have the book written yet, but I taught there for a few years, and I was writing the book, and I showed him a manuscript. One of those kids got a hold of the manuscript in Sweden. That school closed, but they sent the manuscript to the guy who was opening a school in Denmark, the Danish Musical Academy. It was all just people passing it along.
It's all the same thing. It's all the same thing for you. It just comes to you.
Yeah.
And you say, no, I want to be over here. And I said, no, over here. And you say, no, I want to be over here. And I said, no, over here.
Finally,
right?
I say, okay.
And you say, okay, right.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Because, I mean, the whole Scandinavia and stuff, I was like, you've got to be, this is insane. But I thought, okay, what the all heck?
Right, what the hell?
So it's like, that. And now I've taught for the Danish Actors Union. The Actors Union brings me over. So it all, you know, all the kinds of things in Denmark and Sweden. And I have students from all over Europe, really. People come from London because I taught a class in London, and I've musical directed a show in London. So I have people that know me there, and teachers that I've worked with teach there now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's great.
So you finally said yes.
Yeah.
To yourself, essentially,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right,
yes.
To who you are, right.
I mean, it's all been in the same world. It's been the world of the performing arts.
Right. Well, it's actually all been in theater, more or
theater
less.
Theater and musical
right.
theater,
right.
Sure.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, and it's been great. And I mean, you know, I've done a lot of, I've played on television. I've done a lot of piano work. You know, I played on, do you remember Vicki Lawrence?
Of course.
She had a talk show for a while, and mm-hmm. like a morning talk show,
yeah.
And I was the pianist. I would sit on the set and play, and that. So I've had lots of fun, fantastic,
yeah, my
crazy
God.
Jobs, you know.
Well, I was going to ask if there's anything else you'd want to do, but it seems to me that life has offered you all kinds
of... The only thing I want to do that I haven't done is write a screenplay that gets produced.
I was just going to ask if you wanted to write.
Yeah.
Because you write.
I like writing.
Yeah.
And I've written three...
And like, how interesting. A screenplay, not a stage play.
I've written several musicals.
Oh.
One of them got produced in Sarasota, actually. We workshopped it at Flora Studio Theater.
Really?
And it was done at the Golden Apple produced it.
When?
In the 90s.
Early?
What
was it called?
It was called Servant of Two Masters. Although that was the play that was based on. There was a classic farce called
yeah,
Servant of
right.
Two Masters by Goldoni. We called it... Double-Double. I can't remember my own musical. We called it Double-Double. John Ulmer and I wrote it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote that, and I wrote another musical. I wrote several musicals, but I didn't... It was similar to the acting thing. I could not break into that world.
Yeah, it's not...
Or I didn't have the energy that it took to do that. And I had a couple of friends that were in the movie business. One friend, a guy named David O. Russell, who writes music. He has a new movie coming out, actually, in December called Fighter. Starring Mark Wahlberg, and he directed Three Kings, George Clooney movie,
mm-hmm.
and Flirting with Disaster, and I Heart Huckabees. He's a movie director and writer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I watched him get started, and I went and become successful, and I went, oh, that would be fun. Because I love movies, and I love storytelling, and so that's what I'm doing, writing screenplays.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, who knows if I can...
Yes, I know. It doesn't matter. It will... Life will decide.
That's like it always has.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But it's a wonderful life.
I'm so lucky. When I was a teenager, my father hated his job. And it was... He didn't hide that fact.
No.
He did not like going to work. He didn't like his work. He always wanted to be an actor.
Oh, my God.
And I said to myself, that is not going to be... my story.
Right.
I'm not going to do something I didn't want, that I ended up not wanting to do just to make money, which is what he did. And he retired. He's 83 now. When he retired in his mid-60s, he became an actor in Pittsburgh. He's been in lots of shows in Pittsburgh. He's been on television and movies and commercials. And you know.
When
I wasn't going to wait until I was 65 to do it.
When my dad retired, he became a stand-up singer.
Is that true?
Uh-huh. It's absolutely true. He came to me and he said, I need an 8x10 glossary.
That's great. I mean, I love that.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to be 60.
I made the same choice that you did.
Did you?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So, but it's just interesting to me because I don't think a lot of people did what our parents did.
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of people did what they did with their lives, which is they did the thing to make money that they either didn't like or but felt they had to do.
Yes.
But very few did what your father and my father did.
Held on to their dream.
Right, and then said, okay, fine, now, you know.
Now
I think that's really
to do it.
But
I love my work. I mean, I feel...
Well, it's clear. It's very, very clear.
I finish my day, and I walk away from the studio, and I go, God, that was fun.
Yeah.
I can't believe I got paid for doing that. It is so much fun to do what I do. I feel so lucky, because I don't think most people like their work so much.
No, I think that's true. And I also think that you have another advantage, and that is that not only are you having fun, but you're doing so much good. I mean, it's all giving. It's all...
Yeah.
Enhancing other people's lives.
Yeah.
It's lovely.
And I tell you, you know what I think, for me, the most valuable thing that I do, the thing that I hold the most, I place in the most valuable spot, is help people be alive.
Yes.
Because that's what the acting is about. It's about being alive emotionally, alive to your insides and expressing it outside.
Yes.
You know, not pretending to be alive, but really being alive, being in touch with who you really are. That's what the great artists do. I mean, that's what Frank Sinatra did. That's what Judy Garland did. That's what... Bernadette Peters does. That's what any great artist, performing artist does.
It's funny. When you asked me earlier what I do on the show, and I said one of the things I do is interview people who make their living or their life with an art, but the reason I do that is because actually the theme of the show is discovering and recovering who you really are.
Yeah.
And I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because in this culture, in order to do that, it has to be who you really are.
Yeah.
Because it's too hard to do if it isn't who you really are.
They used to say, if you don't need to do this career, don't do it.
Don't do it, exactly. And so when people hear people like you, it's easy to see that you are who you really are. You're not, there's no dissembling here or pretending that you are this guy.
Right.
This is who you are. And it's my hope that when people listen, people who are in denial for aspects of themselves.
Yeah, to be their authentic self.
Exactly, exactly. So you and I are doing the same thing.
Follow your bliss, as Joseph Campbell said.
Mm-hmm.
Do you must know Julia Cameron's artist story.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And there are a lot of ways. But one of the ways is to hear, to be in the presence of, to experience what it sounds like when somebody is really who they really are.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
The thing that I think you were alluding to before about your father is true for most people. And that they aren't who they really are.
Right. They do something they feel they should do rather than what they...
Exactly.
Their
and so then they keep the most alive part of themselves.
Mm,
right?
Ouch, right.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, in a way, you and I are doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could be a heart surgeon and be an artist. I mean, so
of course,
you know.
Yes, of course.
If that's your
if that's your passion.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But I mean, I know a doctor who's a wonderful physician and a very successful physician who really wanted to be a lawyer.
Wow.
Right. So I mean, it's not.
It's insane. It's so
you know.
Funny.
It's really. I mean, you know, he's the younger brother. There were two brothers. And his father was desperate for one of them to be a doctor, and the older one couldn't cut it, so the younger one became a doctor.
Wow.
Right. And so, I mean, it doesn't matter if you have a high-class profession. That doesn't necessarily mean you're being who you are.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, clearly
right.
You can be, but it doesn't follow as, you know,
right.
The night follows the day, that just because you're doing something that's high profile or that other people admire or that you're making a lot of money, that you're...
It's so true.
Yeah.
It is so true.
Yeah. So people could come and work with you. People could come and work with you even if they're not in theater, couldn't they?
Sure. I work with a lot of people that aren't professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to do this. Yeah. Just to get in touch with their real self. You know, just to express themselves.
Yeah. A guy was in earlier today and we just were saying, welcome your soul. Bring your soul to life today. He said, yes, yes, my soul. He's a tour guide in New York.
Yeah.
But he's talented. He sings.
Yeah.
And he needs to sing.
And he needs to sing. Yeah.
Or you turn into a swamp inside. If you're a singer, you need to sing.
It's the truth. And it's something that people who don't have that really don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't understand why people would work for free. why you would work showcase clubs.
You don't do it. You wouldn't understand why people
No, you
do
really
it.
Don't.
There's
people
nothing
are,
like it.
No, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it.
Yeah, it's like bringing your, like if you were a bird and it's the time you fly.
That's
you know?
Correct.
It's really true.
I think that's right. I've not thought of it in quite that way, but I think that's right. Because fish got to swim, birds got to fly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is when they are the most themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. So what you do actually is to help people become the most themselves.
Yes. That's what I aim to do.
It's very lovely. So I usually ask, having lived an entire life really dedicated to this art, would you just think for a second and see if there's anything you want to say about what it's like to have dedicated a whole life to this kind of art, this kind of work?
Well, I mean, it's everything we just said. I can't imagine. I wouldn't be myself
yes.
if I hadn't done this. I am so glad that I was brave.
Yes.
Because it took courage. Because some people discouraged me.
Tell me a little of that.
There were teachers in high school and people in my family who said this will never last. Mm-hmm. Who said this is a dream, a pipe dream. It's not practical.
Was this your father or everybody or a lot of people or some?
My father was not, he was a little bit down on it.
Well, I mean, it's understandable, isn't it? I mean, he had made that choice.
He had made that choice, and I guess it would, you know.
And he must have made that choice because he didn't believe he could have it.
Yeah, right. It was, you know, he was born in the Depression. I mean, it was a whole other generation.
Well, but so he...
And his imagination didn't let him really see that I could do that. And he wasn't horrendous about it. But, I think it would have been easier. I wish he'd been more exuberant about me going after it.
Yes.
You know. And as I said, there were other people, too. Other members of my family, some of my siblings. And
you think there was a little jealousy there?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. And that's why I said it took courage for me.
I think it does. And that is why I say that people who do what you did, do it because it is who they are. You can't buck that
yeah.
unless it's who you really are.
And I had been around enough people that were doing it. Like you said, how powerful it is to be around somebody who's really who's on fire.
Yes, yes.
And I had been around some people who were on fire. And it inspired me. And they were my role models.
Yeah.
And I said, they can do it. I've got in me what I see, I relate to that. It's a reflection of something in me. I'm going to bring myself.
So again, you were
alive.
Very fortunate.
Yeah.
I mean, that whoever those people were came into your life.
Yeah.
Right? But I really want to make that point again and again that being an artist in this culture is difficult. And your family is not the only one who said, oh, that's very cute, David, play the piano, but what do you think you're talking about with a life, you know?
Yeah, and there is a way to do it. If you want to do it, you can do it. And I'm also very big on sort of deeper approaches to it than just coaching and learning external technique. Like I'm very into doing affirmations and having a vision for your life and, you know, working on it spiritually, that kind of thing. I have a woman, she's a middle-aged woman, she had when she was very young in her early 20s, she had a career going as a performer. She sang Radio City Music Hall, she was in the national tour of Fiddler on the Roof in her early 20s. But she got married very young, started having children, had a couple of kids, and with her husband had a business. And she would sing a little bit over the years, but basically dropped out. She dropped out of the business for 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gotten back into the business in the last 5 or so years. She still has a wonderful voice. And I coach her, and I have her doing all kinds of affirmative visualization and talking about it and, you know, writing it down and putting it on her mirror and saying things every day about, you know, I'm having a fabulous career as a performer where I make lots of money and people, and I love what I'm doing, whatever it is, you know, all
right,
kinds of
right,
stuff,
right.
That kind of stuff. And I say, you got to do this every day, particularly when you don't want to.
Right.
You got to really do this every day because you have, there's part of you that is fighting this.
Right.
You got to bring her out of the shadows and love her and help her to free her.
Yeah.
And she has an agent and a manager now, and she's getting commercials. She sang at Michael Feinstein's place over there. She had a night performing over there. We did a show. I mean, she's like, it's like amazing.
She found herself again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it took courage in her life because there's a lot of people telling her she just.
I was just going to say that
they
is not amazing.
There are people that think she's ridiculous.
Yes.
I say, you're not ridiculous. You're alive, and it scares people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly.
Because
right.
They're not as alive as you are.
Yeah, I know that even when you can find yourself, that doesn't mean that you have the courage to express that in the face of what other people will, how other people who have not found themselves will try and take it away from you.
Yeah, because it threatens something.
Yes, I think that's
painful
right.
Painful for them to see
right.
that.
So that's another great gift that you give, the support against the criticism, against the whatever it is that's coming down on them. And because you know how that feels, you know what it takes.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
What I say over and over again is what you're saying. What I say over and over again is to people is be yourself. When I'm walking into an audition, I'm outside an audition with somebody and I'm going to go in and play for them or something, or before a performance, before a cabaret show or a stage show to a cast, I say, be yourselves. That's what is most moving to people. Be yourself. That's what you have to give.
Yes.
That's the only thing you have that's unique. Nobody's you. Show the people who you are. It will move them. It will be compelling to them. Don't try to be something you're not. That's cliche.
Yes, and it's false, and everyone knows it.
Yes,
even
everyone knows
right,
it.
They don't necessarily know it in their head, but they feel it. Right.
It lacks energy.
That's right. And it distances you from them instead of pulling you in.
Yeah,
yeah I
it's
know.
Not, it's not vulnerable.
No, that's right. And vulnerability is what captivates.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's great, David. It's great.
Yeah, when you're vulnerable in front of other people, it melts their hearts.
Yes, of course. And it's rare.
Yeah.
And that may
world,
be why.
The world, it's a brutal life. It's a brutal world.
Yes.
That's one of the paradoxes of this career of being in show business is you got to have a huge heart and a huge vulnerability, and you got to be tough as a bear to withstand the constant judgment and rejection.
A lot of which is already coming from you because
because
of what other people have told you. So you've internalized it, and you can do it to yourself. Never mind, they don't do it to you. Yeah. So it's great. This is a. I think coach is not really a large enough title for you, I mean,
I'm a coach of a lot of different things.
Yes, maybe that's right. It's just, right, that's right. That's great. So anything else you want to say about living this life?
Not really. I'm just, like I said, I'm glad I had it in me or learned how to be brave. To be myself and let people disagree with me and not want me to do it and said, I'm doing it anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a gift.
It's a gift. That's a great place to stop. Thank you, David.
So, you can hear what I had in mind when I said that David was the poster child for The Lynn Show. It is what he says at the very end and what he demonstrates through the entire interview. And that is that he knew from the time he was, I think he said 5 when they got the piano, and that he was drawn to it, and that music was always a part of his life, and that he pursued it and pursued it and pursued it in every way that he could, trying to become an actor. I love that line, that he wanted to be Al Pacino, but that the universe simply did not see him as Al Pacino. But he was not dissuaded. He continued to try and find a way to be David in the world. He didn't abandon it and say, oh, well, they don't want me, so I'm not going to try this anymore. He used everything that he is over and over again. And, of course, what he says at the very end, which is so telling and so significant for me, and that is that other people dissuaded him. Other people told him he shouldn't be that. That was not a good thing to be. And he says, and he's so right, that it took courage, it took bravery to fly in the face of others' definitions of himself. So in the beginning of the show today, when I was talking about the fact that there is a terrific taboo against recovering yourself, there is. It is not so simple as saying, well, oh, I see, I didn't do that, let me do it now. There's terrific pressure usually being brought by, and quite often, the people that are the most important to us. In my book, I talk about something called the relationship contract. That is the unspoken, unwritten, unrecognized contract that we sign with the other people in our lives that simply says, I will be who I am and you be who you are. Well, when you change one of those things, one of the ways in which you have been, I mean, maybe you have always been the one who makes sure the family has their events. You're the person who sends out the Christmas cards. You're the one whose house is always the place where people come for parties. You're the one who, if somebody calls, if they're angry at somebody else, they call you. Maybe that role, which is the role that you were assigned and which you accepted in your family, is getting a little old. Maybe you don't want to do it anymore. But as I don't have to tell you, there's terrific pressure on you to continue to be the person they expect you to be. Well, maybe that's not actually in your best interests. Maybe that is not the life you were meant to live. Maybe you've done it and don't want to do it anymore. Well, I keep making the same point over and over. There will be pressure. It's not as simple. Well, let me say it this way. If it's as simple for you, just go right ahead and do it. Don't let me make it harder for you than it is. But if you're toying with the idea of changing something significant about yourself, and you are aware, as David described and as I am currently describing, that there'll be pushback from that, then you may not want to do that alone. You may need some help. And of course, psychotherapy is one of the ways to get help with that. And I currently do all of my work on the telephone, so you don't have to live in Sarasota, Florida to see me. And there's an article up on the website called Psychotherapy on the Go, which talks about psychotherapy on the telephone, in case you're curious about that. Again, the website is thelynshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave the E out of Lynn Show, thelynshow.com. And at this point in the show, I always mention Josh Hackney, who is indispensable. If you have issues that relate to computers or recording or iPhones, or I like to say, if it has a plug, then and you have any questions about it or need any help with it, then you need Josh Hackney. And you can get him, like you can get me, up on the website, thelynshow.com. And we're going to go out on one more song from the CD. This is Lucille Carr Cafesham singing, and of course on piano and backup is David Brunetti. And if this CD interests you, you can also go up on the website and email me and say you'd like to know how to get hold of it or how to get hold of David. Maybe you want to study with him if you have any aspirations to being a singer. Or if you would like to come down and see David at the conservatory, you can also go up on my website, thelynshow.com, where you can see the flyer for David's event, and you can ask me any questions that you might have. So before we go out on the last song that I'm going to play, which is The Immigrant, I get to say yet again that I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that intrigued you, something that amused you, something that stimulated or motivated you, something that will bring you back, because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And as always, I hope you will be too.
Open their arms to the young searching foreigners. Come to live in the light of the beacon of liberty. Plains and open skies, billboards would advertise. Was it anything like that when you arrived? Dreamboats carried the future to the heart of America. People were waiting in line for a place by the river. It was a time when strangers were welcome here. Music would play, they tell me, the days were sweet and clear. It was a sweeter tune, and there was so much room that people could come from everywhere. Now he arrives with his heart and his hopes set on miracles. Come to marry his fortune with a handful of promises. To find they've closed the door, they don't want him anymore. There isn't any more to go around. He remembers he once heard a legend that spoke of a mystical, magical land called America. There was a time when strangers were welcome here. Music would play, they tell me, the days were sweet and clear. It was a sweeter tune, and there was so much room could come from everywhere. There was a time when strangers were welcome here. Music would play, they tell me, the days were sweet and clear. It was a sweeter tune, and there was so much room that people could come from everywhere. Open their arms to the unsearching foreigner.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. See that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may